Pat, we did it. It's episode 100. And you and I both know there's no escaping a special delivery of an inspiring monologue for such an occasion. When I started the podcast over 2 years ago, I dreamed of a better tomorrow, and it took a journey through limbo in the beginning, but eventually the A-Force did assemble, and Pat and I joined up again. It has been all according to plan since. Now, Pat, I'm not sure if we're a deadly duo or a pair of heroes for hire or just some lovable misfits, but both of us have had a blind obsession of maintaining this podcast mission objective, which is to provide you, the difficult-to-please listeners, with an enjoyable, entertaining, and educational time, no matter the cost. Now, my co-host Pat has clearly made a deal with the devil and has won every major event possible due to some weird dark empowerment or possibly his Kunlun training. He disarms people with his witty banter, but don't be surprised when he gets blood red and personal, busting out the heavy ordnance to magnetically crush his opponents on his way to victory. He never has to ask, "Do you know who I am?" for he is simply known as Pat. And me, well, my name's Sung Soo, and I'm just a children of the Atom. And you can usually find me doing the dirty work on our illicit tech and trying to make sure the show goes off without any trip-ups and doesn't get all webbed up. With Pat and I, there's no sibling rivalry. We're not the daughters of Thanos or anything, and he certainly isn't difficult to please. Honestly, I'm happy just trying to fight off the whims of chaos and help maintain the grand illusion of the show being a finely tuned machine. Now, this highway to hell has been an interesting journey, and we've recorded over 150 hours of content since we've started. We've sacrificed, and we've done some podcast time traveling using PIM particles. Along the way, we've hoped we provided you listeners with some tactical analysis and maybe some tactical maneuvers to help you smash some games and have some fun. We've had some first-class bits and some bits we've had to give the heave-ho. We've brought in some hired muscle in the form of wonderful guests along the way, and we've given it all you've got. I know about you, Pat. I don't know about you, Pat, but episode 100 has made me cosmically invigorated, and I hope we can toss in the cloning banks and make it to another 100 episodes. We want to specifically thank the fan club, aka our patrons, for supporting us this entire time. With all of your support, we've had blood enough to spare as we've expanded from just a podcast to a nexus. Now, we're not going to lie. Sometimes recording each week can be daunting, but this episode has helped us catch our second wind and we're both seeing red. We hope this recap of our past helps propel us as professionals in the podcasting world with rocket boot speed. Our current well-laid plan is that Pat and I record together till the end of the line, and we want to thank each and every one of you for listening. But first, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks, TT, and wow, what an introduction. I give it a solid 9 out of 10. I was waiting to hear Helios laser bombardment, but somehow you never managed to get that in. I don't know why.
It was a hard one to fit in. You know, I didn't want it to get too rambly, so we cut that one out.
Amazing. Thank you for the stellar introduction.
Yeah, and it's been crazy, Pat. Like I said, it's been over 150 hours, which is ridiculous. And I know that some of the listeners out there have actually listened to all 150 hours. And that's a huge kudos, right? I have no idea how someone has put up with us for that long, but yeah, it's been quite the journey.
Yeah, it's a lot, right? We do an hour long episode every single week. We do 15 to 30 minutes ACS every week as well. And it just adds up and up and up.
Yeah. And some episodes have definitely been longer than an hour. And, you know, believe it or not, we've actually been over 100 episodes. We've had quite a few episodes we put out there that we didn't number for whatever reasons, usually because it kind of jumped the shark in the numbering order. And like we talked about with the PIM particles, the time traveling gets a little weird. But way back in the day, believe it or not, I started this podcast as a solo endeavor. And my initial goal was to interview people every episode like I did for War Machine. That became very difficult because there were no people playing the game at that time. It was really hard to find people who wanted to talk about it, which is the complete opposite of the experience right now, right? I feel like there are so many Marvel podcasts, and I don't know about you, but I still get asked pretty often if we want new guests on the show. Pat and I were hooked up pretty early in the endeavor. We did some War Machine and Hordes podcasting, and honestly, we've been together ever since, I think since episode 14.
Yeah. I really appreciate you inviting me on when you did. It was a real pleasure to guest for ATB, and I did a few other podcasts at the time, but I managed to find my way back here, and I've had a home ever since.
Right. So for this 100th episode, we're going to recap some of the adventures along the way. We're going to hit on some of our biggest misses. We're going to hit on maybe some of our biggest wins. We have some interesting things in the middle. But first, we've got to get to our recurring bit that the people love, and that's Sleeve It or Heave It. And I thought this time we'd do two cards, a little different than normal, and we'd each hit on our favorite tactics cards in the game. So, Pat, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'd love to. And it's tough to pinpoint your favorite tactics card in the game. I started off thinking about the cards I use the most, and then I realized, are these really my favorites or are these just the best? And so I cut out the ones that I think are just the best and pick one that I love more than it's given credit for. It's still a good card, don't get me wrong. And that card is Climbing Gear. So Climbing Gear is a card that has a simple effect, right? You spend 3 power and you get to make a short advance. You have the nice little extra fluff that you can climb when you're making that advance over terrain. So you can move over big obstacles and that kind of thing. But the main reason you're taking this card is just for the short advance. And 3 power is a lot to pay. But let me tell you, there's so many good applications for an extra move action over the course of a game, right? Climbing Gear immediately hits our criteria for needing to give you like an action's worth of value, to be worth consideration for a tactics card. And I remember one of the very first games that I used Climbing Gear when it first came out, I excitedly reported back in our Discord channel that I had a turn in the game where I was looking down at the start of my activation and I identified every single character in my team could use Climbing Gear right now and it would be awesome. Like Shuri could use it to move Climbing Gear and shoot somebody off a point on the other side of the table. Ghost Spider could use it to Climbing Gear and set up her spider technique so she gets to move twice, attack twice. That would be awesome. Hawkeye could have used it to double attack and then run to safety. Somebody else could have used it to advance and then field dress somebody. There's just so many ways you can use this card. And even though the price is high at 3 power, I'm just always happy to have it in my roster.
Yeah, Climbing Gear is a great one. And I think the reason that I've enjoyed it so much is, like you said, there's never a game where there aren't an overwhelming number of opportunities to utilize Climbing Gear well, right? It just never really comes up that it's a dead card. It's really hard to argue not taking it. And the impact is a little understated. I think most of the time people are really fixated on attacking, more dice, better attacks. But honestly, so much of miniatures games is movement and table position. And Climbing Gear honestly can fix so many of the sins if you end up in a bad spot.
Oh, absolutely. One of its biggest one of its biggest advantages is the fact that you can use it outside of your activation, right? So you can surprise people by having characters in places they didn't expect. You can retreat to safety if you find your characters being attacked and they've already activated. They take some damage, they gain some power, and they can spend that power to use Climbing Gear to get away. And you can do those little combos with range requirements of superpowers and other tactics cards in ways that people don't expect. I remember once using Climbing Gear to reposition Angela within range 2 of She-Hulk so that I could then use Special Delivery. And that kind of play can be really cool.
Yeah, so I think we're both really high in Climbing Gear, right? Definitely a sleeve it. If you don't run it out there, I encourage you, honestly, to slot it into your roster, give it a try, take it in your 5. I think you'll be pretty impressed with how versatile the card is.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. I love it, especially with expensive characters where the move action feels even more valuable. And I gotta just give an honorable mention to Avengers Assemble, which is leagues better than Climbing Gear for the same effect. And oh my goodness, I'm happy to have Climbing Gear in every roster. Avengers Assemble is just a dream.
Avengers Assemble is a very powerful card. We've talked about that before. My favorite card is actually kind of a weird one. It's on the restricted list. It's actually Field Dressing. And I actually have found myself not taking Field Dressing because I'm forcing myself to get away from it. Because Field Dressing gives me this warm, fuzzy feeling. It's like a blanket. It's like a safety net, my baby blanket. I'm like, you know what? If something goes bad, if there's a crazy dice spike, I'm just going to Field Dressing my character. It'll be okay. That's what I tell myself, Pat. And I don't know. I've just always liked the card. It's been around for a long time. I've just enjoyed using it.
Yeah, it's a nice one to have, isn't it? It's nice to have that insurance policy that if you have a character days before they can activate, you might have some way to get them back in the game.
Yeah, and I found that while we can say that in actuality, there's a lot of situations where Field Dressing can be harder to use than it reads. You do need to be in range 2 of the character. You do need 4 power in order to utilize it. And you don't want to Field Dressing and give your opponent an opportunity to just do 1 point of damage and redaze them. So the actual implementation of it is definitely, I think, worse than the theory hammer behind it when you just start reading about it and dojoing it. But I still have loved field dressing. You know, when I was thinking about my favorite card, I had to list it. And obviously, it's on the restricted list. A lot of people really like it. It synergizes with a bunch of different things. Namely, you know, you probably don't like your own characters being dazed.
Yeah, I mean, it's real good. I don't fault you, and I'm enjoying it a lot right now. It has times where it comes into my roster and times where it goes out, depending on the team strategy. But right now, I've been playing a lot of Avengers, and having that second chance to use Sam's leadership in addition to combining it with all you've got has been great.
Yeah, obviously the synergy of all you've got is huge, right? All you've got being the second activation, after which you're dazed, and then field dressing, removing one damage in the daze. All you've got not giving you damage up to the point you're dazed, just dazing you, and then field dressing repairing you can be a pretty huge boon. So Pat loves climbing gear. I love field dressing. We encourage both of you to use that. And patrons, let us know in Discord what your favorite tactics cards are. We'd really like to hear about it. We know that there are some niche ones out there. We know that one of you is going to say something crazy, and I'm excited to hear why. So next, I thought, Pat, we could go through some of our weirder takes, maybe takes that didn't hit quite as well. We've got some clips from previous episodes, and I want to start with one, Pat. Have you ever used Okoye?
You know what? I have used Okoye from time to time.
All right. So way back in episode, I believe, 21, we did our tier rankings, and I convinced you that Okoye maybe wasn't that good. So while I'm at fault, I feel like the fact I was able to snicker you into this maybe wasn't the best thing. Let's give it a listen and see what we think of our past selves here.
Yeah, let's do it. So those were all of the characters that we had in contention for top tier. Let's talk about then the remaining characters, which we have somewhere between standard tier and niche tier. And we can talk about the two pointers first. So Okoye, I had in standard tier, and you said she was more niche. Why is that?
What does Okoye do? Was what I asked myself. And to me, it's bodyguard. I understand she has some damage output there. But for me, ultimately, is what does she do? She bodyguards things. Well, she ends up in the niche tier for me. The only reason I personally take Okoye on the field, and there's a lot of Captain America bias in this, is because I need an extra character for the Wakandan affiliation. I very rarely am like super excited to take.
Yeah, I mean, I think being a two-point bodyguard is relevant, right? I do think that is a useful specialization to have, but I agree that it's not that powerful. Bodyguard is superb when you're Captain America, but it's not that powerful in its own right, and that definitely pushes it into the niche. The reason I had her in standard is because I think for a two-cost character, she's a good generalist. She is reasonably survivable. She has a decent range attack. She has decent ways to spend her power to get damage. I think she's kind of okay in every situation, and she is the closest to a generalist at the two cost bracket.
Closest to a generalist. Okay.
Maybe that's just bad. Maybe you don't want a 2-point generalist. That's fair. Maybe you're just like, yeah, but so what? Maybe that's not good.
Yeah. We can move on from this. I don't want to spend too much time talking about Okoye, as horrible as that sounds. I would almost always rather have Rocket. I struggle to think of where I really want her outside of the niche that she fills for me, which is, again, I want a bodyguard. If I want a bodyguard who's cheaper than Captain America, I'll take her. And for that reason, personally, I put her in the niche tier.
So we had one question about her.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you there. That said, Okoye is a staple in her affiliation. Surely that means she's middle tier. Maybe. I don't think we said that necessarily has to be, but I would actually argue that of all of the affiliated characters, I don't think she is a staple. I think Black Panther and Shuri are staples in their affiliation, and Okoye and Killmonger are optional. So I think by that logic, I'm more convinced to leave her in the niche tier.
Oh, you're going to leave her in the niche tier now? You're not going to put her? You had her in the standard tier. I had her in the niche tier.
All I'm saying is
yes, I'm winning you over. Excellent. Excellent. Let's move on before Pat reconsiders.
Yeah.
So maybe not our shining moment there. It's funny how ages ago, the way we evaluated things in the power level, Okoye is obviously a very common inclusion in Wakanda, and has honestly proved us wrong, and she's just a powerhouse of a character.
Yeah, absolutely. And In our defense, the power of characters does change over time with the context of what's being played in the game. And at the time we were discussing things, Steve Rogers was a pretty popular and played character, right? And when you have him and he's already a bodyguard, that makes the value of bodyguard a little bit less. And the meta was such that we weren't as worried about protecting people from things like Black Order as you might be these days. And so once again, the value of her role has gone up and up over time. Plus the fact, I mean, to the point that I made in that clip, right? I think time has shown us that people do want a good two-threat generalist. They just want a two-threat character they can put in their roster and be good, and Okoye is that character.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. And I think the other thing that's really helped her out is she fits wonderfully as an unaffiliated two. She's almost never a burden to have. And as we've just gotten wider and wider, a lot of affiliations don't have that affiliated two-threat character, and they really need her. So, yeah, sorry I talked you out of Okoye being higher up on your list there, Pat.
That's okay. I remember when she first came out, I was very down on her, and my opinion has definitely risen over time. She suffered from having a few games where she just died straight away, and I didn't get to see the full power of Okoye and how tough she can be on the table.
Yeah, I mean, she's only 2 points. She's only two threat. We should have considered that more. In the same episode, Pat, we actually ended up having a discussion about Zemo or Valkyrie. And yeah, we can just give the clip a listen here, and then we can see how we did there.
And I still think Zemo is the best of those assassins because he is the most reliable and he's the fastest. But I know that you disagree because Valkyrie was in your popular tier. So why don't you tell me why you rate her more highly?
She's a throw. She can throw things, which I think is phenomenal. She has Asgard for the extra power, so you can use tactics cards on her a little bit earlier. Yeah, so it was funny that we were that far off. We disagreed on Valk, because obviously she's just been kind of a staple for unaffiliated three threats the whole way. And I think a lot of it, personally, as I went back, because I've listened to a lot of our older podcasts to find these clips, is I don't think... Well, I know people were scenario focused in the beginning. I still think we were pretty much set on attacking people off of things kind of in the early part of the game. This was over 2 years ago we were talking about this, Pat.
Yeah. And I remember when Valkyrie first came out, everyone was so high on Baron Zemo, right? He was clearly the best character in the core set. He was making every single roster for every single affiliation at the time. And so there's inertia there, right? And if you have a new challenger, they have to overcome that inertia and prove they're better than the current top dog. So it's going to take more games and more testing to really put that to the test and see who works out better. But you know what? You were spot on about the value of her throw. And I actually, in my defense, I think I was right about Zemo being the better assassin, right? It's just that the reason Valkyrie has become so popular is she is both an assassin and a control piece, thanks to the throw.
Yeah, and I think going back to what I was trying to express before, I think the reason that you put Zemo as the best assassin makes sense. I think it was silly of us to lump Valkyrie into that assassin group, right? I think initially we were grading her so much on how much damage she can do with a charge and all these different abilities, changing her dice. And really, that doesn't matter. She just double moves and throws people, and that's phenomenal, and that's all you need for the entire game.
Yep. Exactly. The fact that she is the premier three-threat control piece. She's the only three-threat control piece that can move characters without needing to do any other actions beforehand, right? Very, very good.
Yeah, so while I may have been right on Valkyrie, and I don't have a clip for this one, I know I was wrong on a lot of other things, and the one that really sticks in my head is I thought Lockjaw would be in every single list and every single roster for the rest of time in MCP. And Pat... I don't take Lockjaw that often. I don't even have my Lockjaw painted, if I'm being honest. So I definitely missed on this one. What happened with Lockjaw? I thought he was going to be so ubiquitous.
I think he just needs a champion, TT. I think you need to paint him up, put him on the table, show people where they've been going wrong. You could be that guy. You could champion Lockjaw.
I don't even have a painting table anymore. We're all packed up for the move. You can see like I'm in a different corner. Like my bookshelf is half empty. I can't even paint him now if I wanted to. My wife just told me I'm not going to be allowed to airbrush in our new house. We're still having that debate. So I don't think I can be the hero that Lockjaw needs right now, Pat. You might have to be.
Okay, well, maybe. Now, look, Lockjaw did get some play when he came out. And I know that he was tried out in a bunch of different rosters. There were some people that did well with him in the TTS leagues, especially the Australians. latched onto him pretty quickly and used him. And let's be honest, his teleport ability is incredibly powerful. I don't fault you for worrying that a range 3 teleport could break characters and break the game, and I don't fault people for trying it out. But I think what we've learned with Lockjaw, and to a lesser extent with characters like Wong, is that it's not enough in MCP to just have incredible support abilities. You need to have some amount of personal output to contribute towards winning the game. You can't just be a force multiplier for other characters.
Yeah, I think the other thing I wanted to mention, and this has to go with kind of the quote-unquote meta of MCP, is I think when Lockjaw came out during that time, I in particular, was really focused on expensive centerpiece models, right? Mm-hmm. And the power of that teleport obviously increases with that. With Sam and a bunch of other things in the meta shift, I see teams that are willing to go wider and wider now. You know, yes. When Lockjaw was being talked about, you know, 3 or 4 wide teams, I think were commonplace. And now, obviously, we're seeing more. I see more 5s and 6s than I ever have before. And it's just an interesting shift. And I think characters will continue to get jumbled around as the meta, right, settles.
Yes. And, I mean, the meta won't necessarily settle, right? It might constantly shift. And you may find that Lockjaw has his time in the sun. Where, who knows, maybe Lockjaw under Steve Rogers moving the new Hulk around is where it's at in a few months.
Yeah, it will be interesting, and that's a good point. I don't know if the meta will ever settle, because honestly, they are at a breakneck release pace, which is kind of incredible. We have a bunch of box reviews queued up. We can get back to those when we start recording again next week. Pat, I know one of the things that you ended up missing on happened to be portals, right?
Yeah, and I knew at the time that I might be missing on portals, because it's such an obviously powerful card. I guess I just wasn't smart enough to figure out the ridiculous turn one stuff you could do with portals, and I had to have it shown to me. Did you get a clip for that one, or can I just give credit where credit is due?
Yeah, I was not able to find a clip for that one. I've listened to not 150 hours of our past podcast, but quite a few hours, and it's been hard to find the snippets we always need, though.
That's cool. So credit here, I think, has to go first and foremost to our buddy Jacob at Xavier Protocols, because he did an excellent blog article which exactly explained, look at all these great things you can do with Pentagrams of Ferala. And prior to that, I was just sort of playing it at face value. I wasn't necessarily taking the Soul Gem, so I wasn't using it on turn one. And I was finding, well, this card is fine, but it's a lot of cost for not that much benefit. Turns out if you pay all of the costs, you take the Soul Gem, you take Strange, you plan to play it on turn one every time, and you build your whole roster and strategy around it, then the payoff is really big. And I really like that it's in the game as this really wacky and unusual way to play that basically defines defenders.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, right? I think when we were evaluating it, we weren't considering it being stapled to a turn one play. Mm-hmm. The same as when we reviewed Advanced R&D. We're kind of like, yeah, it's kind of cool. You can shift power around. But when you consider what you can do for the openings with these cards, it definitely increases their power level by a good bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I did say with Advanced R&D that this is the kind of card that's just going to get better over time because it's an open-ended weighted combo. Sometimes it's hard to spot the turn one plays. And I'm sure we probably had a similar thing with Hired Muscle, right? We probably were not anticipating that Hired Muscle was getting banned, because we weren't fully aware at the time of first looking at the card exactly what kind of combinations of powerful plays you could do with it. Pentagrams is the same way.
Yeah, now I know one of the other things is at one point you said that Wakanata had too many rerolls. And for a little while, I pronounced Wakanata wrong. And this was the craziest thing, Pat. I listened to a bunch of the old podcasts and I could not find a clip of myself saying it that way. What I was able to find, though, is this clip of you being excited about me pronouncing it correctly. On the line now, from across the pond, my dear friend Pat Dunford. Pat, how are you doing today?
I'm really well, thank you, Zhang. And I have to say, I'm delighted to hear you pronounce Wakanda correctly. Well done.
I've always pronounced it correctly. I don't understand. It seems like a weird intro. But yeah, I'm happy you're pronouncing Wakanda correctly, too. So yeah. So I do think it was shocking. I found that clip, and I listened to our Wakanda review. I listened to one where he talked about Okoye, and I could not find a clip of myself pronouncing it wrong. I know I was saying Wakanada for a long time. I remember you being legitimately confused at one point if it was like an American English thing, but I could not for the life of me find a clip of myself saying it wrong.
Okay, well, maybe that's a challenge for any listeners dedicated or interested enough in this little tangent. They could go and find it. But yeah, there was a long period, like several episodes where you insisted on saying Wakanada. And I didn't know if you were just doing it to subtly troll me, if you genuinely thought that was how you pronounced it, if you had some sort of joke that I wasn't in on. It was so confusing.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to sell the bit. You really just got to lean into it if it's going to be a bit, bury it. I'm sorry that I confused you with that, but yeah, I think in the grand scheme of things, it worked out. We've had a couple of successes along the way, and you know, I didn't find clips of that. No one wants to hear us being right on stuff. Pat's won a bunch of the TTS League, so obviously he's had multitude of successes. If you want that stuff, you can find it on the podcast. We didn't find clips of that. The other thing that I did want to highlight is the hot dog introduction, as we call it. And a lot of people have commented on this. There was kind of a weird one for this episode. We hope you enjoyed that. That was Ryland gave me an idea for that one. And the hot dog intro, do you remember how it came about, Pat?
I think we were chatting, coincidentally, perhaps. At the time we were recording one of our episodes, the World Hot Dog Eating Championship had just concluded. And it was in the news at the time for some reason. Something along those lines. And you were telling me how much you enjoyed it. And then the following week, you came out with this outrageous introduction.
It's one of my favorite sporting events of the year. Like, I don't know what your favorite sporting events are, Pat. I love the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition. I grew up in New Jersey. I just think it's astounding to watch these people eat like 50, 60 hot dogs in 10 to 12 minutes. It's kind of disgusting. It's like the most American sporting event I can possibly think of. Like, we are just going to see how much food we can waste in the shortest time possible. And the guy that does the introduction does these big over-the-top hot dog introductions. And I just thought they were funny. And then we ended up doing a couple of them. I've done a couple for you. I've done one for Sooner when he won the TTS League. We ended up doing one for the Wills. And I've got a couple of them queued up here, Pat. Here's my favorite one that we ended up writing for you.
In a world of nothing, of barren hills and cracked earth and once proud oceans drained to sand, there will still be a monument to our existence. Bleached by the sun, perhaps, and blunted by time, but everlasting, because this man represents all that is eternal in the human experience. Through the curtain of the aurora, a comet blazes to herald his arrival, and his victory shall be transcribed into every language known to mankind. On a tabletop not made of stone, nor wood, nor even bone, but of the virtual variety he has dominated and secured his place in history, I now proudly present the winner of the Season 2 of the Marvel Crisis Protocol Tabletop Simulator League, Pat Dunford.
And I think that was the first one you got, Pat, and I kept them up for a couple episodes. They actually take an astounding amount of time to write. Like, it's hard to just think of ridiculous over-the-top things to say. George Shea is the chairman for the, I think it's the Professional Eaters League, I'm not sure. But he's the one that does it in Coney Island, New York. And, I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. Was that what you were expecting when I told you were getting a hot dog introduction?
No, I didn't. I had no idea what to expect. But whatever it was I was expecting, you far exceeded those expectations, TT. Well done. I really enjoyed those intros.
So how many hot dogs do you eat a year, do you say?
Not many. Okay, so I need a clarifying question. How do you define a hot dog? Is it any kind of sausage? Does it have to be in a bun? Is it a frankfurter specifically?
You know, I haven't thought about this. You know, it's funny. We've got something with the Wills later where we talk about what a cake is. What is a hot dog? Yeah, just tubular meat. I would consider sausage.
Any like sausage?
You call it bangers and mash, right? I think that would be a hot dog.
Okay, so any sausage is fine. Doesn't have to be like a frankfurter. Doesn't have to be in a bun. Doesn't need all the trimmings. Okay, that obviously increases the number, but still not that many. I'd say maybe, like when you eat hot dogs, like if you're eating sausages, maybe you have two at a time. Maybe I do that, I don't know, once every couple of months? So we're going to do a conservative estimate here. We're going to say I eat approximately 20 hot dogs a year.
Well, the average American apparently eats 75 to 100 hot dogs a year, which is an astounding fact. And we are struggling with obesity. But one of the other hot dog introductions we did was for the Wills. This was a great one because we actually had the Wills on video for this. This was before the band restricted. They didn't know what was coming. And I honestly really enjoyed their reaction. So here's this one if you don't remember it.
Pat, over here in the U.S., we've heard of someone called Billy Shakespeare. Have you ever heard about him in the U.K.?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe by another name.
Right. Well, he was quoted as saying, "That which we call a rose by any other name would still smell as sweet." So I ask you, Pat, what is in a name? The great Will Shakespeare also said, "The name of a thing doesn't matter as much as the quality of the thing." And Pat, I pose to you and I pose to our listeners that right now the quality of the thing is all that matters. Over the years, this rock has been blessed with several high-quality Williams. The aforementioned Shakespeare was a bard that rivaled the great Taylor Swift in his time. William the Conqueror tried to prevent Brexit way back in 1066. William Wallace fought for freedom and will forever in my mind look like Mel Gibson. And yes, Will Shatner has boldly gone where no man has gone before. But today, I dare say, we're joined by not one, but two great Wills. And with their powers combined, there is no question as to which Will would smell the sweetest. Today, we're joined by Will Schick and Will Pagani from Atomic Mass Games. Gentlemen, how you doing?
We should just be done now, because anything that happens after that intro, it's just hot garbage. Like, that was amazing. I've never been so speechless. It's just it. You better be careful. You're going to wind up on the banned list if you keep talking like that. It's just too powerful.
Too strong in the podcast game. I'm doing well with DT. Thank you. I think Schick is still stunned though. So
I got nothing. I mean, I'm just here. I'm along for the ride.
So obviously we're very thankful the Wills have come on the podcast. They've come on the podcast a few different times. It was just fun to do the introduction. You know, Pagani and I are personal friends. Schick, I've met at a bunch of different War Machine conventions. They're great people to work with. I love talking to them about MCP, and we hope to have them on the podcast again. And if they come on, we'll give them another introduction.
Oh, well, I'm glad you've said that, TT, because I think now how can they resist?
Yeah, we're just going to put that out into the universe. We'll see. You know, if the universe wants it to happen, then I'm sure it'll happen again. Now, not all of the amusing talking has been me. Pat, you've definitely had some moments. And some of my favorite moments from recently are your reading of Team Tactics cards. Can you think of any of them that I'm thinking of?
There have been some pretty fun Team Tactics card names recently. I'm a big fan of Mysterios, Jean Grey. Am I hitting the right notes here?
You did. You found both. Let's start with the loud one. I really enjoyed this one. I had no idea Pat was going to do this. I was very happy when it came out on the podcast. Pat, I'm going to let you read it, but I need a lot of emotion from you in the character name.
All right. The character name is Gene!
And we've kept that bit going. Every time we've talked about that tactic card, one of us has had to yell it. It's I don't know. I get a lot of enjoyment every time I hear that clip. Most recently, too, we recovered Spider Foes, and then I this came out of nowhere, but I was excited to use the Grand Illusion.
You activate with priority, and you slam down your card, right?
You actually slam it down?
I tend to say, I'm playing the Grand Illusion!
So I haven't gotten to use the Grand Illusion since we've done this. I do plan on trying to put as much vibrato into my voice as possible when using it, Pat. But I do think anyone you play against should be excited when you use the Grand Illusion.
Oh, it's so good. And let me tell you, TT, I'm not going to hold back. It's so fun to play the Grand Illusion. It's my favorite.
It's a great card. It's a very powerful card. So that's all the clips we had lined up. Again, Pat and I just wanted to get together and talk about it. It's been a wonderful 100 episodes. Like we're talking, it's over 150 hours of content, which is crazy. We do also do a weekly after the credit scenes. This is normally exclusive for our patrons. I found a gem way back in the day. This is the one of the early after the credit scenes when we first had Will Schick and Will Pagani on. We talk about Cake. Josh Colon joins us. We're going to play it now because I think a lot of you haven't had an opportunity to listen to it. Again, it was behind the Patreon wall in the beginning. So we're going to go ahead and play this clip here. Let us know your thoughts on Hot Takes on Cake.
All right, patrons, thank you so much for listening to Across the Bifrost. Here we have our after the credit scene. We're joined by Will Schick, Will Pagani, and marketing coordinator Josh Colon. Thank you guys so much for taking the time. I saved the best stuff for last, so I've got some questions that people really want to know, people need to know. Are you guys ready for this?
Oh, so ready to spoil all the secrets.
Mm-hmm. All right, the first question, again, is a Twinkie a cake?
Absolutely not. A Twinkie is not even food. It's an abomination.
Twinkies are food, but I don't think they're cake. I think for a cake, I mean, a cake has to have like icing on top, right? Like not just the inside.
No, what about a sponge cake? Cakes don't have icing. They're still considered
angel
cake.
Food cake.
Angel food cake.
I don't know. Fantastic. I don't know if I consider angel food cake. Cake. I don't think I consider it.
I mean, I think by a pure definition, a Twinkie is a cake, but I don't like it.
I certainly don't trust them. I don't trust Twinkies.
Sure it was not.
Okay. So we're a little split there, but okay. So we've got a brief. Okay, I got an idea what you guys think of Twinkies. So follow up to that is a donut a cake?
A cake donut is definitely a cake, but a raised donut, which is fried, is not a cake. That is purely a pastry.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I
agree.
Both pastries.
No, I agree.
And I think it's because you eat them with your hand, which might make a Twinkie a pastry.
They're all in the family of pastry.
You can eat cake with your hands too. That's how you eat angel food cake and sponge cake.
But you're not supposed to.
But they're in the family of pastry, but cake is a type of pastry.
Right? I'm telling you, like, cake donut literally says cake. It's a cake.
Yeah, no, sure. Yeah, but it's donut, raised, no.
It's raised and it's baked.
But then the donut itself is a separate type of pastry. So not a cake.
No.
Agreed.
The raised donut. Not a cake.
Not a cake.
I would definitely agree with that one.
Not a cake.
You have to differentiate between donut types. Donut forms are important.
You have like hierarchy, like species, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. You have like different. Yeah.
People came over for ginger snapping this.
Yeah.
Okay, so donuts might be a cake, it sounds like. Depends on the donut. Is that an accurate assessment of that?
The caked donuts are better than raised donuts.
Absolutely not.
No?
It depends on the version of the raised donut versus the cake donut.
I mean, in like the pinnacle of their form.
Pinnacle form?
Yeah.
What is
the
that?
The best
though?
One.
I feel like that changes based on things.
That's powdered. A powdered donut? Powdered donut's my favorite.
I mean, what are those little Hostess?
That's what I'm saying!
No. Those are, again, abominations.
But they're pastries. They're the family of cake. They're pastries, but they're not cake.
I will eat an infinite amount of those.
Hostess donuts are basically, like the chocolate ones specifically, those are just candles.
Those are my favorite.
They are waxy. Holy crap, they're waxy.
Those are my favorite, dude. I used to buy those out all the time.
They're just candles. That's all they are.
Vending machine? I'd buy the whole row.
Next question.
All right, next question. What about cheesecake? Is that a cake? It does, after all, have cake in the name.
Cheesecake is definitely not a cake.
It's not a cake. It's own separate... wonderful, perfect.
Are we arguing that cakes have flour in them? Because a cheesecake does not contain flour, which would make it not a cake.
No, does a cheesecake crust have flour?
No, it's butter and crushed. I mean, technically, if you crush up like graham crackers or something, those are made with flour,
which is distinctively the best cheesecake crust.
So graham cracker,
definitively. Graham crackers.
What about crushed up Oreos?
Cheesecake,
also solid.
Cheesecake is not cake, but it's better.
It's better than cake.
Yes. Yeah, cheesecake is the
best. I'm kind of with Pagani on the pie thing. I feel like cheesecake is a pie.
I don't know.
It's made in the exact same form.
What, are you going to go to your local... Can I get some cheesecake pie, please?
No, that sounds
like
a cheesecake.
Moron.
It's
like,
a translation.
Look, how would you make a pie? You make a crust, you put filling in it, and bake it, correct?
Cheesecake.
How do you make a cheesecake? You make a crust, you put filling in it, and bake it. Ergo, a cheesecake is a pie. How do you make a cake? You make batter, you put it in a pan, you bake it, you come out with a light, fluffy, moist, like, delicacy. It's not the same thing as a cheesecake.
Is funnel cake a cake?
No, it's a donut.
God, this happens all the time.
By the way, it's just the standard fare for our office.
Yeah, it's just like opinion, and then Schick will come in from his office. Like, this is why you're wrong.
And lay down the truth.
Just a couple more, guys. You definitely bake this. What about cinnamon rolls? Are cinnamon rolls cakes?
No, they're a pastry.
No, they're a pastry.
But they are the highest tier of pastry.
Everything's the highest tier for you.
No, cakes, donuts are the highest tier donut.
But again, you go back to baking format. When you make a cinnamon roll, you make a dough. So it's more of a bread. It's actually a bread because you make a bread dough. You roll it out. You put all the stuff in it. You roll it up. You slice it and then bake it. So it's a bread.
I actually think it's a muffin.
No, it's a bread.
But you make it in
muffins are also breads. Mm-hmm. Made in the same form. That's not true. Muffins are actually cake. We just call them muffins. They're so good for breakfast because we tell children you're not allowed to eat cake for breakfast. But a double chocolate muffin is just a chocolate cake that you have misnamed to a muffin so you don't feel like a fat boy for eating it in the morning.
There you go.
You might as well just slather a slop of ice cream next to it and just, you know, go all in.
Honestly, that sounds incredible.
Exactly. But
I think that cinnamon rolls are muffins.
No,
you put them in a muffin tin.
No, you don't.
No, you put them in a pan. They're a cake.
Who's making? I mean, now I kind of want to make a muffin cinnamon roll though, because I feel like that might be phenomenal.
It sounds great to me.
I'm in
for anything that involves
cinnamon. I'm abstaining from this one.
Really?
Look, you got.
Do you hate cinnamon rolls or do you love cinnamon rolls?
I'm still mad about the cheese.
Cheesecakes were bad. We simply said they're pies.
I don't think they're pies. But let's continue. Next question.
All right, just a couple more, guys. What about Rice Krispie treats? Is that a cake?
No.
That's definitely not a cake.
No.
Because you don't bake those, right? Yeah.
No, you don't. You just let them set.
You have to bake a cake. When you think of a cake, you don't bake.
Pies. No, yeah, that's
no
still
baked.
Baked.
No
baked. It's baked with a light bulb, but it's baked.
Definitely a pie, not a cake. Maybe even a cookie.
No, did you just call Rice Krispie Treats a pie?
No,
cakes.
Rice Krispie Treats, I think they're just their own category of food.
I don't think they're anything.
A crust? I mean, yeah.
They just forgot the filling.
That makes sense.
Unless you put filling in them, in which case, I'm in.
They're a what, then, if they have filling?
A Hot Pocket.
A hot pocket?
But like a cold pocket.
I mean, you could microwave them.
Oh, that would not work.
I'm going with Rice Krispie Treats, not anything. They're just their own thing.
Are they a pastry?
No, they're not a pastry. They follow none of the rules for pastries.
Okay, guys, two more questions. With all of that in mind, yeah, each one of you just take a minute. What is your favorite cake?
German chocolate.
Oh, that's really good.
Donuts. The half of donuts that is cake. Look, if I had a choice between cake and donuts, I would pick donuts. If I have to pick a cake, because we've ruled that half of donuts don't count as cake, it'd be red velvet, but it has to be made the traditional way with beets.
It's just so
cream cheese icing.
Yeah,
specific.
It has to be made with beets.
My favorite.
Josh, have you ever had a real red velvet cake?
I don't like red velvet cake.
My wedding.
But have you ever had a real red velvet?
No,
cake?
I have not. That's
well, then you can't say you don't like red velvet because what you don't like is regular cake with red food coloring.
True.
That's liar.
It's just
cake.
Chocolate cake.
That's true.
More like vanilla cake. It's vanilla cake with red food coloring.
My wedding cake was red velvet.
It's full of lies.
With beets.
With beets. I know. You make it with the beets, Josh.
My favorite is vanilla birthday cake.
That is disgusting.
Because of the memories. It reminds me of the happy birthday.
I'm shocked you didn't say funfetti.
Whatever.
You're a very funfetti kind of cake guy.
It just reminds me of the memories.
It's like, it's basically bland and boring, but it's exciting because we put sprinkles in it.
I know what you're trying to say.
It's like a Chipotle mayo of cakes.
I know what you're trying to say, but I don't appreciate
it. It's mayo, but it's spicy. Funfetti cake.
All right, guys, and the last question. Is cake a soup or a salad?
Oh, see, you need a Dallas for that question, because we're all just going to say it's neither.
Dallas goes off on soup or burrito, though. Or super
no,
taco.
Super taco.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a super taco. Okay, we can change the question. Is it a soup or a taco?
It's a soup, because it doesn't have an exterior that you hold and can eat.
That's Dallas logic. That is not official Atomic Mass Games logic.
I mean, is cake like dry soup? Like, is that what we're doing? Like, all like the ingredients of soup are dried?
So the definition is, can I hold it by a part of the food and not can I? Am I supposed to hold it by a part of the food and eat it? Or do I have to use a utensil?
Right.
Or, once again, should use. So that would make a steak a soup.
So with that logic, then cake donuts is a cake, and you are supposed to hold that while you eat it, so it's a soup? So it depends on the cake?
No, that one would be a taco.
Oh, you're right. That would be a taco. The rest would be soups. Okay, I'm with you now.
True. You hold by the donut.
You don't hold it by the donut.
You don't use it. I mean, you could use a fork, but you're supposed to hold it by the donut.
Oh, donuts or tacos?
Donuts or tacos, German chocolate cakes or soup?
I mean, ergo, by this Dallas logic now, all donuts are not cakes? No.
No, no, this has nothing to do with whether or not it's a cake.
I feel like it does.
Well, like cereal's a soup.
You can't say that.
Cereal's definitely a soup. There's no argument that cereal's not a soup.
You can't say that. You cannot say that cakes are soups, but donuts are tacos, and then say that donuts are also cakes. That doesn't work. Because you can't have a taco that's not a taco.
Have you ever had a taco salad?
It's not a taco.
That is a soup.
It also depends on the taco salad. If it's in the taco shell bowl, then it's still a taco. You just eat it with utensils because you're wrong.
That makes it a soup.
No. No.
You're supposed to hold it by the bowl?
Yeah. You just eat it out of the bowl. All
right.
It has been too long of a day for these logic exercises that we're having. I don't need the F, if, then, why streams of logic.
This is why you're in marketing and not game development.
Whatever. God.
All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you guys so much for making the time. It was a blast talking to you. I look forward to Marvel Crisis Protocol hitting the shelves November 15th. As the guys mentioned, you can check out the live streams Thursday at 1 p.m. Thank you guys so much for making the time. You guys have a great day.
Thank you very much, sir.
You too.
All right, so we hope you enjoyed that. It was a weird one. One of the things I did for my old War Machine and Hordes podcast was there was always a joke segment, a gag segment, and people asked, why I started doing that. Pat, I don't know if you remember the first time we did a podcast together, I think it was difference between English and American words or something like that. And the reason I started doing that is I needed some way to loosen guests up I didn't have a good rapport with to get them going. It kind of stuck, and then we honestly just held it over when I started doing this podcast. So that was the After the Greatest Scenes. I want to thank the Wills and Josh for taking part of that. That was always good fun. And then again, if you're interested in hearing more of those, sometimes we actually give useful information in the After the Greatest Scenes. Sometimes they're complete gags, but you can find that at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. And I do want really, really, really want to thank the patrons in particular. I called them the fan club in the beginning because I was trying to use tactics cards name, but we do really appreciate you. The patrons pay for acrossthebifrost.com, which is phenomenal. I can't believe how many clicks we get for that. A special shout out to Mark Garreau, who does a lot of the administration on that, GD Nerd. We really do think it's a beneficial tool for a bunch of people and for discovery, right? The amount of clicks and click-throughs we get for it is really incredible. Pat had the idea for the Nexus, and we're happy to throw that together and provide it for you. It also pays for the hosting for mcpdb.com, the Marvel Crisis Protocol database. We still are having some work done to it. Shout out to Ghostier for maintaining it. But like I said, the patrons do support that. They pay for this podcast and the hosting, and we really, really do appreciate each and every one of you. I thought about naming and thanking every one of you, but that sounds like a lot of time and kind of like some dead space. We didn't do that, but we want you to know that you are all appreciated.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone. I think the Nexus has been a real big success. I don't recall myself having the idea for anything beyond the name. I don't deserve the full credit for that one, but I think it's been a huge boon to the community. It's really excellent that we have a place where creators can come together and share their work with a bigger audience, and where if you're a fan of MCP, you can go to this one website and you can find a ton of different content from a ton of different people. You don't have to rely on whatever is currently trending on Facebook to digest your content. So I think that's worked really well, and I think that's just benefited everybody and helped the game and the community to grow.
Yeah, and again, if you're interested in becoming a contributor for it, you can reach out to us. You can also email us at nexus@acrossthebifrost.com. Or you can reach out to Pat or I on Discord if you are interested in becoming a contributor. And our best days, we think we've had like 7,000 clicks on the best day. And obviously, we normally average multiple tens of thousands per month, which is phenomenal. Again, hopefully they discover your content through the Nexus, and then they don't have to use the Nexus to find you in the future. They can subscribe to you directly on iTunes or Spotify or your own Patreon, your YouTube, your OnlyFans, whatever you're doing for content, hopefully they can follow you on there. Again, the Nexus is just meant to kind of bring people together. And again, we really just wanted to, like a single pane of glass, you could find and discover a bunch of different MCP content. All right, Pat. So I think that kind of wraps up everything we wanted to cover today. We do have the music bit, which has been incredibly successful. Last time, you kind of backed into it, but you were able to get 98 degrees. And we discovered that there is a difference between boy bands in America and in the UK.
Yeah.
So this one is interesting. This is going to branch into our first area. I'm going to give some stuff away because just give me some hints here, Pat. This is a cover. I will accept either person who is very well known for covering this. Covers get into like some weird areas where like there are some people who like are the song is better well known for the cover than it is for the primary, right? And I think this falls into it. So okay, so you ready, Pat?
I'm ready.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, that old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become, my sweetest friend? Everyone knows I go away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you hurt. All right, Pat. Do you know who sings that?
Yeah, so this is absolutely is one of those songs that's way more famous with the cover, right? The cover is Johnny Cash.
That's correct. Good old Johnny Cash.
And the original was Nine Inch Nails?
Yeah, Trent.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trent Reznor. Yeah, excellent. Epic comeback. You didn't need any hints or anything, Pat. I wish I could say I had more faith in you. I'm sorry. I was excited to do more Johnny Cash songs, but that's okay.
Well, there's no stopping you. You can count that as a Trent Reznor song and then move on to Johnny Cash from here.
Maybe. We'll see. I'm still surprised the music bit is that successful. I didn't think it would be that popular. So to wrap this up, Pat, I do want to talk about what do you envision for our next 100 episodes? Obviously, we're going to have a lot of box reviews. And this is something that we've talked about internally. We still feel that there's a need to do the box reviews. We try to provide a little bit of deeper content in the ACS. We try to go through the box reviews a little faster. We don't want to read everything on them. But we do think it's important to help keep people up to date because AMG is putting out a ton of content with that stuff. But what other types of content do you envision for the next 150 hours, Pat?
Well, you know what, TT? On the subject of box reviews, I got some good feedback from a couple of people that listen to the podcast, actually, that they really like our reviews. And I think it's important that the way we do them, right, we dedicate a whole episode to the contents of a single box. And we go a little bit deeper on the characters and tactics cards in that box. Whereas it's very easy for some podcasts to kind of get trapped in this news cycle where you're constantly paying lip service to whatever is new, but you don't necessarily have time to then go back and delve into each one in more detail. So I like that one of the things that our pod provides is that we systematically cover every single release in a good amount of detail. So whatever it is you're interested in, you can find out about it. And you can even go back and without having to sift through like the 5-minute news sections at the start of pods, right? You can go back by title and listen to what you want to know about before you maybe make a box purchase or think about starting an affiliation. So I'm more than happy to continue that. I think it works really well. I've also really enjoyed our affiliation reviews. And one of the things that I've been considering is with all of the changes that have been happening, new releases over time, maybe it's time to do re-reviews because like the Avengers review we did back in the day is going to be very different, right, to the Avengers of today and different again to the Avengers of 3 months from now. So maybe affiliation reviews just need to be this evergreen thing where we check in on them every 6 months or every year and see how the affiliation has changed.
I think that's definitely relevant as affiliations kind of grow and expand, right? Did we do a Cabal affiliation review since Sin? I don't think we have, right?
No, it's something we've toyed with because Sin changes Cabal so much, right? It's another great example. Web Warriors have changed a huge amount as well. There's certainly a bunch that we could change. And then there's others that haven't really changed that much, but we maybe didn't give them enough credit. Like, I don't know how much we talked about Pentagrams and Defenders review. Actually, I think we talked about it a lot. So that one's good. That's fine. But yeah, there's a bunch that we could change. We could update.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something we could go through. You mentioned it in the beginning, right? Avengers is obviously a big one. Asgardians would be another great one to go through. You know, we've seen some previews. I'm excited to see what Brotherhood and X-Men become in the future there. So yeah, you know, maybe we can do that. One of the things I've enjoyed doing the most is actually our dojo sessions. I would like us to do a few more of the Dozo sessions. I just really enjoy kind of the, going through the list building process on the fly, letting people see into how you think about lists, how I think about lists. I think that's a really fun one. And I think we're going to start taking Dozo requests from some Patreon users if they're looking for a particular list in an affiliation or a list built around a different character.
Yeah, I think that'd be a very fun thing to do. We often save our Dozo for the after credit scenes, but some of our full episodes of theory and planning have been really enjoyable. So absolutely up for doing more of those.
And I think the other thing that I want to say, at least here, Pat, when we start talking about the future, is we honestly don't know what we're going to do because MCP has changed so much. In this past year, right, we've come out with a couple different new ways to play, a whole bunch of different new box reviews, different ways to play, different release kits, which is another fun way to play, all sorts of new characters. They've changed core rules. They've kind of broken establishments on things. So honestly, it's hard for me to say what we're going to cover because we honestly just don't know what's coming.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun, right? That's what makes doing this podcast and playing the game so exciting, is it's constantly changing. There's always new stuff to be excited about. There's always new stuff to talk about.
Yeah, so Pat, it's been a blast. I really want to thank you for joining me on this journey. I do sincerely, again, want to thank the patrons and each and every one of you who does listen to this weekly. It's incredible. You know, according to the numbers, we get a couple thousand listens per episode, which is kind of mind-boggling to think about. I'm in my basement talking about superheroes. Pat's sitting in front of a bunch of Totoros. And yeah, we can't believe that you all tuned in for this. So we really do appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for humoring us as we kind of look back on this 100th episode as the recap. We hope you enjoyed that behind the scenes with the after the credit scene. You can check out all of our content and so much more over at AcrossTheBifrost.com. You can also find us at Patreon.com/AcrossTheBifrost. If you're interested in supporting us, we really do appreciate your listens, whether you support us on Patreon or not. Until next time, everyone. Stay safe and cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the Bifrost skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.